Good afternoon. I'm Linda Dow. I'm pleased to welcome local author and historian Arlene Stafford Wilson. Arlene is well known for her short stories about life in Lanark County in bygone days and has recently published her eighth book entitled Lanark County Collection, Winding Our Way Down Memory Lane. So congratulations, Arlene. Nice to have you join us today.
Oh, thanks, Linda. Thanks for having me.
So your eighth book, my goodness, when did you start writing your first book?
Well, I guess the first book was a little bit unplanned. I was gathering together my mother's recipes for, and I was just going to put them together in a little folder and give them to the grandchildren.
Right.
And that kind of exploded when I have four siblings, and I sent them each a request for any of the recipes that they might have. And when they sent me back the recipes, they also sent back stories about growing up.
And, oh, nice.
You know, these are the cookies that I took on the milk truck. And these are the cookies, or these are the breads and different recipes that I had when, you know, when I was just young and getting into my own baking.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my sister had a story about a pork chop casserole and how she made that for her first date. She wanted something simple to make that she couldn't mess up.
Something to impress.
Something to impress, because he'd taken her out for so many nice dinners and she wanted to thank him. So it was just collecting these recipes, and when we finally put them all together, there were actually 93 of them.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, my mother was a Perth Fair. Well, she competed in the Perth Fair for many, many years, and she did so well that they eventually asked her to be a judge, and she judged in Perth and Lombardy and Tweed and all over Lanark County. And so because these recipes won so many prizes, we thought, you know, maybe other people would be interested in these
right,
too.
Right.
So we put them together and put the stories in with them, and it ended up being a 300-page book called Recipes and Recollections, Treats and Tales from Our Mother's Kitchen.
A 300-page book?
Oh, yeah.
Goodness.
And then again, the five of us decided, why don't we use this as a fundraiser for the little church where our mother brought us when we were kids, was Calvin United Church over on Cameron Side Road near Dewitt's Corners.
Right.
So for quite a while, the book was used as a fundraiser, and it did very well. And one of the ladies, Betty Miller, who used to be my Sunday school teacher, she said, we've raised enough money now. She said, take the book and sell it yourself. So it started going out into the different bookstores and doing quite well, and that's how it all started. That was 2011.
My goodness, eh? So it was an organic growing process, it sounds to me.
It really was.
Yeah.
And
so,
then the next one was Lanark County Kid, and that is when the snowball started, because that was a book of short stories about all different places, Carlton Place, Salmont, Smith Falls, you name it, little places, Balderson Cheese Factory, and different places that we used to go when we were kids.
Yes.
And that's when the real momentum started, because there was a real gap there with in stores. I mean, I've been to stores myself, huge stores. Chapters on Rideau Street is one of the big ones I can think of, where I'll go and I'll try and find a book of local stories about places that we know.
Uh-huh.
And there are lots of stories on the Rideau Canal or different things like that
yes.
are, you know, big places, famous
places.
But nothing
places. About Lanark County.
Yeah,
right?
Try and find a story about Dewitt's Corners or about Althorpe or Bolingbrook or, you know, Westport or some of the places that we knew. So I could see that there's something missing there, you know.
I was just going to ask you, what inspires you to write stories about Lanark County back in the day?
Well,
but you've just answered part of that question by saying you couldn't find anything to start with, and then, you know, your mother's recipe books. But you're also from here. These are your roots, right?
I am. And I think that our local history is a perishable commodity. And as the memories of our generation fade, and the ones before us are already passed on, and every time a generation passes on, we lose a part of our own history. I think it's important to record the stories of who we were and how we lived for the future generations.
That's a very nice way of describing it.
And many of the places that I've written about in this book are already gone. The Rideau Ferry Inn burned down in 1976.
Oh.
The original library building, there's a story about that.
Right.
And, I mean, the building is still there, but it's not the library that we remember. Right. And or all of the people that worked there over the years, the early librarians, the ones who worked through the war years, and the ones who transitioned us into the computer age.
Right. You know, as a genealogist, why do you think we love to remember the old days so much, and why is it important for us to connect with our past?
Well, I think that we're all on some level, maybe not as much as others. I mean, I have just my own siblings. I have some that are very interested in genealogy, and when I find out a new ancestor and tell them about it, and some of them are less interested, and I think that's the way it is with most people.
Right.
But these are the things that make us who we are, the places that we knew, the ordinary people who may not end up in the history books, but were an important part of our communities. If these people and places aren't documented, within a generation or two, they'll be lost to memory, and that's it. We'll have no more record of them, especially the ordinary person that won't make it into the big, you know, the big history books.
Yes, yes. You have once again captured intriguing anecdotes of people and places in Lanark County, and what gems will the reader find in your latest book, Lanark County Collections?
Well, I've got six stories in this one. The first one is The Mysterious Ways of the Water Witcher. And this goes back to, in fact, it came from a memory that I had, and I had gone around. It's nice to have four siblings, because you can always ask one of them, what do you remember about this?
Yes.
And there were actually three of us the day that this story took place, back in the 1960s. And quite often in the summer, our well went dry, and our dad brought home aluminum milk cans filled with water from Chaplin's Dairy in Glentay. That's where he worked. And
right.
At some point, he decided, you know, we need a new well, you know, so I don't have to keep doing this every night. And
yes.
He hired the Thompson brothers, Jerry and Connie, and they brought Jack Dowdle as their water dowser. And this was the very first time I had ever seen someone dowsing for water.
Now, I find that interesting, because I was reading a bit about that. About you call it a water witcher, and I always thought it was a water switcher or diviner.
Well, I've heard it called that, too. I've heard it called switching, divining, dowsing.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess it depends where you're from or where you've, you know, how you got connected with it yourself, your
right.
own individual connection to it.
Now, and tell us how that is done, because a lot of our listeners might not know. Some of our older listeners will know what that is.
Yeah, they sure will, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was interesting, too, doing the research for this story, because I actually talked to the man who did the well drilling of our well that day.
Back in the 60s?
Yes, back in the
60s. Oh, my goodness, you're kidding.
No. Jerry Thompson, and I spoke with his wife Charlotte as well, and she did the books, and she had the records going right back to into the 60s when they first started the business.
Right?
So, and it was quite something, because they came to the book launch.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Your book was launched, by the way. We didn't mention this to our listeners, but it was launched this September.
That's right. Yeah,
in
the book
Perth.
Nook. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So this was fascinating.
They came to the book launch.
Yeah. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say it was really something to meet Jerry. Because the day that he was in our yard, or the year that he was in our yard, he was only 27.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, we're not going to talk about how old Jerry is now.
No,
okay?
We won't. But he's not 27 anymore, because this was the 60s. But the interesting thing was
not doing the math either.
he had an interesting story to tell about Jack Dowdle, the dowser. And Jack Dowdle was from Glentay. He worked with our dad on the railroad back in the early 50s. And the interesting thing about Jack was Jerry said that Jack always he insisted on using an apple branch. And what they did was they cut the apple branch in a Y shape. And he held it in his hands, with his hands facing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so the apple switch, they called it, was in the Y shape. And he walked back and forth across the yard. And at some point, this thing bolted down towards the ground as though, you know, it was a magnet or something. My sister Jackie was there, and she even asked if she could try it herself, because
is that right?
We thought, what is going on? Is he making the stick move?
So you saw him do that?
We saw him do that. My brother Roger was there that day, too, and we all watched him do that. And I guess it stuck with me, and I wanted to make sure that this was something that was captured, and that these people were captured in everyone's memory, because I'm sure they weren't only doing our well. I'm sure they did wells all over the place.
Yes. Now, when somebody else tried it, though, and not Jack, did it work? same way.
In fact, Jerry and Connie, the two lads that had the well drilling, said that neither of them had the gift.
Really? So it is a gift then?
It was a gift because, I mean, Jerry did it for 60 years.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
I thought if Jerry could have done it himself, he wouldn't have brought Jack with them.
That's right.
You know, why would they pay someone else to come and help them, you know, if they could do it themselves?
That still goes on today, though, doesn't it?
Water witching? It does, and not as much as it used to. But it goes back to the Middle Ages when they used this method to find not only water but minerals. They even used it in England to find coal.
It's incredible. I always thought it was a willow branch they used. You're saying it was an apple branch. But
yeah. I guess it's a preference of the dowser because Jerry said that Jack swore by the apple branch.
We might have some listeners that know something about this.
I'm sure.
Might get in touch with you or here at the station or something.
I'm sure.
It'd be nice to hear from somebody about that. Wouldn't it be fun?
Oh, it would be fun. And Jerry had a funny story where, you know, he would say, "Find me some water, Jack." And Jack would say, "Yeah, I will, as soon as you climb up that apple tree and bring me down a switch." You know, so it was kind of an ongoing joke with the two of them.
I love your stories. They're just amazing.
Well, and it's nice to have, I can't thank them enough. I have the four siblings who, if I can't remember something, they'll go, "Oh, yes, I was there that day. I remember this."
Right, so, right.
That helps.
What about some of the other stories? I know we've only got so much time, and it would be lovely to stay on each story for quite a while, but maybe we could go
on to another one. Well, I guess the next story in the book is about the Rideau Ferry Inn.
Right.
And I'm sure there'll be a few people out there that remember that place.
I certainly do. Well-known place.
This story takes place in the 1970s, so we've jumped up a decade.
Yes.
And it tells about the wonderful carefree nights of our youth and the live music and meeting new people, sometimes cottagers from the States. And people would come from Smith Falls and Brockville and Kingston. And sometimes there were more interesting things happening outside in the parking lot than inside the dance hall.
Like what?
Well, there were people drinking in their cars because, you know, we were all young people then. We didn't have very big budgets.
No, Arlene, you're not going to suggest that,
well,
are you?
I'm sure I didn't recognize any of these people. But and the parking lot was actually known to some as the Passion Pit, so you can imagine what else was going on out there.
Not to mention fights.
But some nights, you're right about that. There were beer bottles. You'd walk outside the front door, and there would be beer bottles flying through the air. And occasionally you'd see the guys from Smith Falls football team. You'd always recognize them. They'd have the red leather jackets on.
Oh,
and there'd be a little altercation with them, with the Perth lads.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But I think that still goes on to a certain extent, don't you?
Probably. So that's what that story's about.
Yeah, right.
And I talk about some of the bands. The five-man electrical band played there.
Oh,
The Paul
yes.
Carl band. That was the house band for years. The Cooper Brothers, Too Cold to Hold, The Crayons, 8 Seconds, Metagenesis.
Oh,
lots of bands.
Stop.
That probably ring a bell out there.
My goodness, I hope Dave White's listening to this on his way.
Yeah.
Because he'll know a lot of these bands too.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, and now there's one about. I know there's the Perth Library. There's the I wanted to talk for a minute about the Stumble Inn, the little bar
in
Ferguson's Falls. I thought that was so interesting.
Well, this was an infamous, very lively bar with a colorful reputation, where many of the locals played cards, gambled, drank, and ended up in fights as well. You know, liquor and fighting go together usually. It was also a gathering spot where many of the locals played music, sang songs, and they told stories. And the bar was operated by Billy McCaffrey back in the 30s. And the stories of this bar were passed down to me from my father, who had a habit of taking us on Sunday drives, and we always ended up in Ferguson Falls because he was from that area. And
right.
We would always go to St. Patrick's Cemetery, and we would walk up and down the rows, and Dad would point out everyone as we went, even people that were just neighbors, he pointed them out. So he loved spending time in that cemetery. But across the bridge from the cemetery and down a little bit, there's a log building, and that was the Stumble Inn.
Is that still there, that log building?
Yes, it is. It's a residence now.
I thought so. There are a couple of log buildings there in Ferguson's Falls.
And his cousin Tom Stafford, also from the same generation, they were young men in the heydays of this pub.
Uh-huh.
And one of the interesting things about the Stumble Inn was the hours of operation. Billy, the owner, didn't always follow the legal opening hours for a bar in those days, and so the locals could almost always buy a drink at any time of the day or night.
Oh, my goodness.
And one of the most scandalous stories about this bar is that it was quite common for the men to stop by for a drink before and after Sunday Mass at St. Patrick's Church. And the way this was explained to me, just to justify it, was that the Mass at that time was spoken in Latin.
And well, it's no wonder they needed a drink.
Well, exactly. And in fact, that the Latin Mass continued right into the 60s.
Oh, really, did?
And, yeah, according to Doris Quinn, who is one of the members of the congregation. And the church had no air conditioning. So if you can imagine a hot, humid church,
yes,
and the Mass is in Latin, so the men would tie their horses up at Charlie Hollinger's hotel. They'd go for a drink at the Stumble Inn,
wow,
back across the bridge and into St. Patrick's Church. And the drink or two seemed to take the edge off of, you know, the Latin and the heat of the church.
Right. And then in the winter, was there any heat in the church?
I'm not sure.
Drink would help with that, too, I suppose.
It would, you know. And just it would just help with the Latin, you know, no matter
exactly
what the temperature was in the church. I think the Latin would be the biggest biggest stumbling block to get over.
I would think so.
Yeah.
The sourdough story was very interesting as well.
Well, in this story, we travel back in time, back to the Stafford House on the third line of Bathurst. Well, now we call it Tay Valley Township, but to us it was Bathurst. My mother was always baking. She baked bread daily, and my father always said it was hard on your digestive system to eat bread the same day it was made. So he waited until the bread was a day old before he would eat it. So mother, it was like a factory in full production, and she kept huge metal cans of flour and sugar and baking ingredients in the pantry.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things she kept on the shelf at my eye level when I was a little girl was her sourdough starter. And so this story is about being a little girl and how peculiar it was having a jar of sourdough starter right at my eye level.
Bubbling away.
It was bubbling. Some days it was foamy. It changed color. It would go from white to ivory, then gray, and sometimes it bubbled right over. And I always found this really disturbing when it bubbled right over and went down the sides of the jar.
And not something you were thinking you'd wanted to eat either, I suppose.
I thought, I don't know what this stuff is, but it's very creepy. But this is one of my mother's baking secrets. And she used to scoop this out and use it in many of those prize-winning recipes, her bread or coffee cakes and cinnamon buns. And it gives it quite a distinct flavor. It's a richness with a little twist.
Yes.
And so I put the recipe for this sourdough starter at the end of the story in case anyone wants to try that themselves.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
You know, Arlene, there are other stories to cover, but, you know, we're running out of time. I'm just checking the time here. We've got a few minutes left. But just briefly, we've talked about your launch in September and how well attended it was.
I guess the library would be a story that people might be interested in, because I took the library right from 1907 from the very first librarian that worked there, Hattie Nickel, who was still riding horse and buggy, and all the way through the ages up until today with Erica Heason. So it goes through. I kind of focused on the librarians themselves for this one. You know,
wow.
Hattie Nickel, Flora McLennan, Doris Stone, Nat Flett, Vera Sanderson,
yes,
and Sharon Hodgkinson, Marilyn Tuff, Diana Cleland. There's a little scandal in the story about Diana.
Oh, my goodness.
Susan Snyder, Faye Cunningham. And Susan and Faye were the ones that kind of transitioned the library from the old records being written by hand into the computer age. And they
right.
were also the librarians that worked there when the fire took place in 1980.
Right.
So I think a lot of people would find they'd know a lot of names in that story.
Yes, and the Port Elmsley driving, of course, that's an interesting story as well. But you know what? We've only got a couple of minutes left.
All
it's
right.
just been so much fun, and the time's gone so quickly.
Oh, it always is. Fun
oh, my goodness, right. So the book is a good one. People will read those stories, and it's just a great way to curl up on a cold winter day and enjoy going back in time.
And they can get the books at the Book Nook in Perth, Bookworm in Perth, or Mill Street Books in Elmont, or online at staffordwilson.com.
Staffordwilson.com. I'm just going to check the time here.
There's a couple of great stories about the drive-in, too, a couple of really wild nights there.
I can imagine.
Do we have a couple of seconds for the drive-in?
We have a couple. If that's what you want to say, yes, yes.
Well, I'm just thinking there was a night that Bill Beveridge used to have a field of cattle on one side of the drive-in and a field of sheep, and a couple of young lads took the fences down, and the sheep and cattle got in into the drive-in and were walking through the cars. There was another night in the 1960s where a skunk got his head stuck in a paper Pepsi cup, and he started walking through the cars, and people were shrieking and getting up, and they were standing on the top of their cars. And for that that story, I spoke with Linda Williams. She was the founder, Bill Williams' daughter, or is the founder's daughter. So,
yes.
And Jan Stepniak, another one of the owners. So I think people will probably know a lot of the names in that story as well.
Right.
I always put an index in the back of the book so you can look, and see how many people you know. Maybe you'll even see your own name,
Well, that's great. I wanted to ask you so many more things. Can we look forward to a ninth book? Perhaps in the future?
Oh, I'm sure there's lots more stories about Leonard County that haven't been written yet.
And do some people bring stories to you, or do you research them yourself, or what happens there?
Well, actually, it's funny you should ask, because yesterday I got an email from Alan Stanley, and he asked if I'd ever written a story about Poland or Hoods, a couple of very small communities in mm-hmm. Leonard County. And I haven't, so...
Well, there you go.
It never hurts to get some new ideas.
You'll have to get your pen out and get busy again.
I will.
So, website is staffordwilson.com. And where can we find the books again?
At the Book Nook. That's at 60 Gore Street East in Perth. The Bookworm, 76 Foster Street in Perth. Mill Street Books at 52 Mill Street in Elmont.
Sounds great. Arlene, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a heck of a lot of fun for me, and I know that reading
too.
The book will be a lot of fun for people, too. So thanks again for joining us, and good luck with that next book. We'll talk again, hopefully.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I've been speaking with local author and historian Arlene Stafford Wilson about her latest book, Lanark County Collection, Winding Our Way Down Memory Lane. I'm Linda Dow. Thanks for listening. Have a great afternoon.